Quorum yet, we're one short, but why don't we start the meeting, because I think all the bills are being, they're decent going to finance. Yeah, they're all going to finance.
No.
Wait a minute. Decent goes to finance, and the other two will be laid over for possible inclusion. So, for Representative Bunn, why don't you start to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today we're going to do the, I need to move the DE3 amendment, which is what we'll be discussing. Can we
well, we
still discuss
move
that?
It now, but you can certainly discuss it.
I'll discuss
it.
The DE3 amendment, okay? I also am going to make a very short amendment to the amendment, which is the A1 amendment. So you all should have those in front of you. I won't discuss the short amendment to it yet, but basically we're working off the DE3 amendment today. So, Mr. Chair and members, essentially this, the intent of this bill is, number one, to retain some level of dental benefits for adults in Minnesota healthcare programs. The governor's budget eliminated both coverage for adults in the regular Minnesota Care and MA, other than pregnant adults. It also eliminated completely the critical access dental care program. So the intent of the work involved in this bill was, number one, to retain some access for adults. And the two major reasons for that is, first of all, that it's become more and more evident over the last many years that dental care is essential medical care. It's related to overall health conditions, and of course it's related to quality of life. And secondly, we know from experience that when we do not provide coverage for dental care, that we have an increase in uncompensated care through our hospital emergency rooms. Already there is too great extent of use of our emergency rooms for emergency dental type services. They are not really appropriately set up to adequately deal with that, and it's very costly to our hospitals throughout the state. Just today I learned that In 2001, the state of Iowa ended its coverage of adult dental benefits through their programs. And subsequently, in the time period from 2001 to 2008, the use of emergency rooms for dental care went up 312% over that time period after they eliminated the adult dental coverage. So there's definite evidence from our neighboring state that this elimination would lead to a significant increase in use of our hospital emergency rooms. Already we have too much use of them for these purposes. So that is the first intent. Secondly, we are concerned, obviously, with cutting expenditures from our budget this year to address the budget deficit. So it was the intent of the work and stakeholder work around this, developing this bill, to reduce the cost in this area by 25% to 30% or so was the target we were aiming at, and we have achieved that through this legislation. Thirdly, we were interested in the issue of quality assurance and making sure the work that went on through these programs, and particularly the critical access program, was of a high quality, and that patients weren't at risk or there was quality problems. And finally, through the discussions in developing this bill, there was, I'd say related to the quality issue, there's also significant discussions leading up this legislation about known instances of fraud and abuse through our critical access program in particular, that we needed some language to address going forward to make it possible for us to terminate or disqualify providers who may be problematic in the system. So this bill attempts to address that as well. And finally, and we've taken one small step, more than one actually, but at least two in this bill to kind of simplify things and to reduce the regulatory burden on dentists who are providers in the system. So I'll talk about that as well. So those are the objectives: retain access, decrease costs, improve quality, reduce fraud and abuse to the extent it exists, and to reduce the regulatory burden on providers. I'm going to follow in an order that's conceptual rather than the order of the bill, but I'll tell you what sections I'm talking about when I get to them. First of all, in the core of this legislation is adjustment of the adult dental benefit. This is non-pregnant adults in our health care program. This was the work that went into this involved bringing in a group of stakeholders about a little over a week and a half ago. We met for about 3 hours on an afternoon. We also, in the weeks prior to that, had lots of email and documents provided as input. We then had that meeting, and then following that, more email exchanges and input given as to how the adult benefit should be modified. There was quite a lot of, there was both the agency and also DHS, also providers and also payers in the room at the meeting, including critical access providers. So a whole array of folks that relate to the content of this area. There was quite a lot of general agreement as to, there were few areas of some significant discussion in terms of what should be in or out of the benefit set. But overall, there was considerable agreement about what the benefit set should look like if we were going to try to achieve, 25 to 40% reductions in cost of the benefit set. So what currently exists now in the bill, it's in Section 6. It spells out in statute an adult benefit set. This would be for both MA and for Minnesota Care. There was discussion about conducting this through rulemaking and not spelling this out in statute. And that was part of the discussion, or a hybrid of having this for a period of time and then rulemaking afterwards. Through a series of discussions, we concluded that we should go forward with putting this in statute, but over time the agency could come back with recommendations for a modification of that, additions or subtractions from this list, based on discussions of an advisory committee that we are setting up. We also have dealt with the adult benefit deals with primary care. It mainly saves money for adjusting the frequency that various kinds of care can be obtained. Currently, under our programs, there really are not many frequency limitations at all, including the normal frequency limitations most of us have through our state insurance or through our private insurance, the usual you can only go twice a year for a prophylaxis cleaning. That's not a limitation currently in our public programs, for example. So we have limited many of the preventive care to once a year in terms of cleanings, fluoride treatments, those kinds of things, vitamin x-rays, etc. We have limited the type of filling materials that can be used for those that are medically necessary but not necessarily in the back teeth, the more aesthetic ones. We've also we've also paid close attention to elderly and disabled populations and some of their special needs for being in outpatient facilities, requiring anesthesia, requiring different kinds of x-rays or screens, more serious treatments because they're seen less regularly, those kinds of things. So there were whole discussions about special needs groups as well, and we have attended to those to a great extent in the language that's here in the benefit package to address that. There were some items that some safety net groups would like to see more of, but we would not, there was an agreement around some of those, and we have excluded them here in order to receive a larger savings because we knew we would not achieve it if we included some of those. But there was, and they weren't as unanimous, those areas. We also, the difference between the adults and children is that under MA, we are pretty much required by federal rule to provide a full array of dental services for children and not in pregnant women. The only exception is if it's not medically necessary. So we have made some adjustments also into the children's package, for example, the kind of amalgam that can be on the back piece of having the typical silver filling rather than the clear fillings, those kinds of things. It saves some money in the children's program as well. So a few areas we have just provide some guidance and limitations on the kinds of things that can be done to save some costs, but otherwise to meet federal requirements, the full array of benefits is intact there. I think that we were fairly successful in what we did with this. I think it has overall, when we talk about fiscal notes, it has achieved the goals we had in mind with this. Going below this set of benefits, I think from the discussions I heard, would have some significant consequences for people's well-being and their health. This is, I think, the benefit set that most in the room felt was a floor for kind of a well-being and medically necessary benefit set for the patients involved. So we would have to look very carefully if we were to go further than this as to how we would proceed forward going any further than this. So that's the big task that we had before us in this legislation. A second largest area of attention was the Critical Access Dental Program. It was the other program that was zeroed out under the governor's proposal. Obviously, through our other discussions and other piece of legislation this session, this year and in previous in recent years, we've had large, significant discussions about access to the legislature and the importance of that, of dental access and expanding access. So obviously, going back to zero on this program is of great concern. There was some disagreement over the effectiveness of this program. One of the arguments that the governor had, there had been a study done, was the actual, there was some evidence that the actual numbers of people that had access had not been dramatically or significantly increased. Some others looking at that data argue with that some a bit and have counter arguments on that. But more fundamentally, those who were engaged in the original creation of this program argue that the primary focus of that discussion was around ensuring that the critical access, that safety net providers remain operational and that they remain available to provide dental care. And so it was really about shoring up these available programs rather than necessarily increasing significantly the numbers of people involved in them. So there is some discussion going on there around that I think down the road this committee and the policy committee need to pay further attention to. I think there was general agreement in the room that we wanted at this time to maintain this program at some level though. So we had a couple different goals for this program. First of all, there was also a significant conversation from all parties, the agency, the safety net providers, including clinical access providers, and also the payers, health plans and Delta Dent and others, that they were all aware of some serious abuse in this program. Coding-related abuses, frequency of treatment abuses, that, and also quality concerns about the quality of the services being provided by some individuals in the system. And they felt that they did not, the agency felt that they did not have adequate capability of, without great legal, significant legal trouble, terminating providers as appropriate. So there was general agreement by the others in the room that this was true, that abuses were occurring and that there were bad actors involved across the room. I think what the overall solution should be here is not necessarily solid yet. This portion is in Section 6, and it spells out language to tighten up who can be designated a critical access provider and, most importantly, the criteria for terminating or reinstating critical access providers. This portion of the language primarily came from the agency. Their concerns, they had also been dealing with the Attorney General's office on this issue for some time. The Attorney General's office, from what I recall, had advised them that they needed some statute language to assist with this. This all turned around quite quickly, though, and having met our deadline to get this together for the fiscal note purposes, we have now received further feedback on this section, and this is one section we are going to have, the primary section of the bill that we have some ongoing discussions over on the next few days. The response has been that this has so tightened up or so increased the potential for termination that quite a number of the current critical access providers would be excluded from continuing in the program under this language and different features of this language. And I have collected those responses in the last 24 hours, and we are having additional meetings starting tomorrow on that topic. And so we'll be working with the chair and staff to create a further revision to this particular section. I think it's very important in going in the right direction, though, in that we need to address these issues as part of our overall effort of assessing such to make sure that the money that is employed here is employed in the most appropriate way and for those who really need it and to the providers who are following the rules. A second part of this, what we're doing with critical access, is we're basically giving the instruction that the overall program is going to be capped at only 75% of the 2008 expenditures, that we're reining this whole section in by at least 25%. And, of course, that could be further scaled in various ways moving forward if we need to down the road. That is in section, Sections 5 and 8 address that capping. So rather than are statutorily setting up different criteria for who can be a critical access provider, or as is currently done through their rule process or their policy process, saying to be a critical access provider, you have to serve 25% of your clients, you know, have to be from public programs, et cetera. We did consider that possibility of changing those percentages, maybe even making them different in different regions, but decided in the end that we would leave, that we would set the amount we were willing to spend on this program. We would tighten the rules around the program, but we would leave it to a committee that's being created to more carefully determine how critical access providers would be designated so as to get the best impact for the audience we're trying to target. The other one last part about what we've done with critical access is currently we have two different bonus payments for critical access, one for MA and one for Minnesota Care. The MA is a 30% boost and the Minnesota Care is a 50% boost. I heard in these discussions that this was kind of confusing having the two different figures, and given that we and that it had been a little bit arbitrary from what I could tell, the 50 versus the 30. So again, as a cost savings measure going forward and also a simplification measure, we are reducing the Minnesota Care one to 30% as well, so it's consistent across the two programs. In that regard, both with that change and also with the benefits that change, this is affecting both Minnesota Care and also the MA. Therefore, in addition to getting general fund savings, we're also going to experience some health care access fund savings from this as well, although they're much smaller than the general fund savings. So those are the major changes we've made to the critical, we're addressing the critical access, we're addressing the fraud and abuse, we're doing some simplification, both with the equalizing of the two payment booths, and we are cutting the cost of the program and restraining the cost of the program overall on that. The next and final area, which is a much smaller portion of it, as I addressed in the fiscal note, is the area that came up in when we reached out starting 2 months ago to dental communities saying we're going to work on the dental area, please give us your ideas. One idea that flowed in from some individual dentists was they felt there was excessive regulation in the inspection of x-ray equipment in dental offices, that there was both vendor inspections and calibration required, and also on-site and also DHS on-site evaluations and inspection required. And the dentist we heard from felt that this was overkill, that it could be done in a simpler way, that the DHS inspection really didn't have to take place in person. They could just make sure the other ones actually occur, those kinds of things. We pursued this idea. This would not save any money in the general fund budget. This area is dealt with fees and special funds. But we felt that it was legitimate to reduce this. If it wasn't necessary, we should look at anything we could do to help our small businesses and our providers as well. This part of it, the information has come into the very late in the process, including last night on this. And so we have a little bit of contradictory, conflicting information from the department and from now from the Dental Association on the necessity or lack of necessity of some of these inspections. So I do have an amendment today to change the wording in this section. I think what I received now does suggest it merits changes in this area, but that the extent of the changes is a little bit less certain, and that's what the amendment addresses at, when we'll put on the amendment. So that is the section of the DE3 amendment, and I'd be glad to take questions so we can move the bill.
Well, I'll call the meeting to order, and we have a quorum, and Representative Gottwald told me he would move the minutes if we corrected them so that he was marked as president rather than absent. And he was here, so Representative Gottwald moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So the minutes from April 6th, which was yesterday, are adopted. And Representative Bunn then moves House File 961, and then she would move the DE3 amendment. She has described the amendment that gets the bill mostly in the way she wants it. So all those in favor of the DE3 amendment signify by saying
Mr.
aye.
Chair?
Yes, Representative
Bunn. Do I just do the A1 amendment to the DE3 as a friendly amendment to my DE3?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so she, Representative Bunn, moves the DE3 amendment and incorporates into that the A1 amendment. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the DE3 amendment as amended is now the bill. And are there any questions for Representative Bunn from members? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bunn, when I looked through this, I was looking, I see here your fiscal note, but I see that it is a total cost savings to the state. So I might understand then that these are amounts of money to pay for this would come out of these other areas. Is that correct? Is that what that fiscal note means?
The fiscal note means there's three parts, significant parts of the fiscal note I should have referenced at the end there. First of all, it saves from current forecast expenditures. It cuts $15 million off the general fund expenditures. It cuts about $3 million off the healthcare access fund expenditures. And then there was a positive expenditure. So those are savings that we would incur if we pass this off of current projections. And then there is a positive expenditure for, actually I forgot to mention the pilot project. I've mentioned this one component, so I'll just talk about that. Then there is an extension of a pilot program for emergency room versions that would cost $723,000 more, but it would be from the Healthcare Access Fund. The fiscal note is wrong on that one. They have it in the general fund and it's Healthcare Access Fund. So these are savings. Now in comparison to the governor eliminated the dental program for adults and the critical access, and that saved us about $47 million. This saves us $18 million. So that's the difference.
So Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Bunn, the difference of savings is the governor has $49 million savings. This has $18 million savings. The chair,
Representative Kiffmeyer.
It's 47 versus approximately 18. Okay. And the difference between those two has to come from somewhere. Where is that difference between those two? Is parked somewhere or accounted for somewhere?
The difference is that we would have to cut out fine savings elsewhere throughout our general fund budget to not have this portion cut as much.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, I appreciate this approach. You and I have talked about some of these approaches right along. In fact, the House File 1865 that I'm bringing forward that would actually pay commercial rates, the market rates to dentists, I think would also help in the same way. Right now you're kind of requiring that in order to get the preferential treatment or to get these grants, they have to accept people under Minnesota Care and accept those payments, whereas if we actually paid them commercial rates, we wouldn't have to worry about it, they'd accept them anyway. But I appreciate the approach.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, and I'll echo that. This is a lot of hard work to dig in, and I appreciate all that. Mm-hmm. I do have a question about the x-ray part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so different than the one-year thing for clinic sales and so on. There's a lot of little clinics around,
mm-hmm.
and their x-ray machines are just fine. We get ours calibrated every year or two. And I can work with you along the way, but I don't know why you would exempt only dental clinics and other clinics, because they're just as well cared for. We have the same calibration guys that go look at ours. And I think the question that you're asking is, how necessary are those inspections mm-hmm. anyway? The very same question you're asking in licensing about why does that one profession have an exemption on a professional sale matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have an amendment. I didn't know this was coming today. I haven't got an amendment prepared. Is this going to go to, this is going to thing in the omnibus, right? Is this thing here? Okay,
yeah.
So maybe I can talk to you about that. And I think if if it's good for dentists, it should be good for chiropractors. I don't think, you know, architects, that was an issue on the licensing. I don't think architects have x-ray machines to worry about, but some of these small clinics, this is a, I think it's a $200 fee or something, and it's a burden that adds up. And the question really is, what is it a necessary inspection? And I think not necessarily, especially when these vendors come out and we have our tanks cleaned professionally every month and for the developer stuff, and we do all these little calculations which don't benefit anything, just to make somebody happy. We did relax the rules a couple of years ago to require that if you have a low incidence clinic for taking x-rays, only had to do the test once a week instead of every day, which was a small amount of relief. Anyway, so I'll talk to you later, but I thank you for reaching out on this part.
Other questions? We're ripped in a bunch.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make one statement about the other component of the bill, which is the pilot program. We currently have a pilot program which was just initiated last year. It's only 3 months into the program at three hospitals to look at diverting non-emergency and preventable dental services away from the emergency room to other kinds of clinics. They're just, like I said, very in the early stages of it. The evidence about it isn't yet conclusive, so what we do here in this legislation is to expand that to one other hospital and to expand that those four pilots for 12 months. That with the goal eventually to get, you know, to see if we can get some cost savings out of this, to be able to book some savings in the future with these kinds of diversion programs.
Yeah, and I would just comment that the difference between 47 and 18 million is the difference in our budget, but those people don't go away, and they will still end up in an emergency room having their teeth looked at in an inappropriate way, and so that cost will still be borne by somebody in the governor's budget. This won't be in our budget. This is an attempt, I think, to save significant amounts of money, but also try to keep people out of emergency rooms for their teeth. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am just curious if the department is here and has any comments on this.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Chris Reiser from the Department of Human Services, and we have worked closely with Representative Bunn and other members of stakeholders group to fashion this bill. And I think that we would also agree that eliminating the dental benefit altogether would cause huge problems, both financially and personally, for people in our programs, most importantly. So I think working at a basic benefit set is a good thing. I think this benefit set is just that. It's a basic benefit set that will serve people. So I think we support that. We also support kind of tightening up the rules around who gets into the critical access dental program and who we can terminate and not have in that or not designate for that program. We also, as Representative Bunn mentioned, we are in the process of developing a subcommittee of our Health Service Advisory Council, or HSAC. And that will be a dental subcommittee that will help us continue our efforts in developing a dental benefit set that is based on quality, best practices, evidence, and other things. And so there are some issues that this subcommittee will also address that are listed in the bill. So we do support the aspects of the bill.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, does the department have data that kind of shows that this approach to critical access dental providers is working, that doing more of this kind of thing is going to help?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did a report of the critical access dental, and we are paying approximately $23, $25 million a year to providers in the critical access program. Mm-hmm. And I think we, from our standpoint, we see this as a way to support providers who are serving our clients, but also would like it to be a measure of increasing the access, because that has been an issue for forever, to increase access to people on our programs. Unfortunately, we have found on a per member per month basis that this money has not measurably increased access. So that's another thing that we want our advisory committee to do, is to restructure the critical access payments and find ways to reward providers for continuity of care and other kinds of things, to see if we can improve, both support providers who are serving our clients and improve the access.
Representative Gabo.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I guess I'm a little concerned if we're going to put more money into this, but we really don't know how to deploy the money to increase access. I mean, obviously, that's what this program is intended to do. Might it not be better to know how we want to do that before we put more money into it?
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chair, I think that there are some other testifiers that are testifying today, and one of them probably will address this a little bit, but one of the arguments was that on this origination of this program is that at that time that for the business model of the, particularly some of the safety net providers, to continue to be viable, to even have the access that was there, that was currently in place, that the retention of access was a key objective here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? Then we'll hear from Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not really a question. I just really wanted to thank Representative Bunn for doing this, because it's been a lot of work, and really it reminds me that we set out to try to cut the budget with a scalpel instead of a hatchet, and it's really clear that that's what she's really tried to do here, so I think it's great work she's done on behalf of all of us.
Okay. Are there people in the audience who wish to comment on this bill? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Michael Helgeson. I'm a dentist with expertise treating children, adults, and elders with special needs, and I'm the CEO of Apple Tree Dental, which is a nonprofit organization that's part of the Safe Safety Net for people with special health care needs. And I want to thank Representative Bond and the committee for working so hard to develop an alternative to eliminating all adult coverage and also decimating the critical access providers across the state. I think it's very important work, and we support the effort overall, so I want to thank you for that. We're very supportive of the urgent dental care project that would redirect people with dental emergencies, and I know that the state's critical access providers and federally qualified health centers and so forth look forward to collaborating with the emergency rooms more effectively so that thousands of people showing up in emergency rooms can be treated instead in dental settings where they can get more definitive care. We also support the addition of a dental subcommittee to the Health Services Advisory Council. We think that's a great idea. In particular, we support the idea of including some safety net providers and consumers on that group, because we think sometimes their point of view isn't maybe taken into consideration adequately. We share some of the concerns of the department and would support some improved and streamlined methods for terminating critical access providers, but we've shared with Representative Bunn our concerns about some of the issues in the specific language. So I'm hoping over the next few days we can work with the department and others and come up with some language that might be a little bit more appropriate. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, we support the goal of the Subdivision 9, which looks at a specific reduced dental benefit. However, we do believe that there are some alternative approaches to that set and some further changes to that set that would better protect, in particular, people with special health care needs. I'm going to highlight just a couple, and I'm hoping we can have a little further work on that. The ones I'm going to highlight are actually benefits that could be added that I believe would actually reduce total costs further. Those include for people who have brain injuries or developmental disabilities or Alzheimer's, and they're not able to receive an exam or a covered service that is on this list without some behavior management, some additional time and strategies. That code needs to be added. Without that code, those patients won't be treated, they won't get the services on the list, and they'll end up in the hospital, and they'll end up getting general anesthesia, which is covered and costs thousands and thousands of dollars. Similarly, sedation procedures, which are low-cost procedures for these same special needs patients that makes getting a filling or a tooth pulled possible in a dental office, if you eliminate that coverage and only cover anesthesia in a hospital, you're going to drive up costs and you're going to cause delays in care for those folks. Those are just a couple of examples where considering the overall health picture and not simply which services will, you know, cut dollars, you know, on a spreadsheet. I think there's a little bit more work along those lines, but in general, I think the structure in the process is good. So I want to thank everybody for the opportunity to testify and would welcome any questions.
Rosa Abler.
Thank you, and Dr. Helgeson, I appreciate your approach to this. I have encountered people in my office who have visited hoping to avoid getting cut from something, and I'm happy that I tell them all the way in and find the best way to solve our problem, and you have. I was just chatting in the aisle with you. I just want to emphasize on page 5, the section about the sanctions and all that, and just to help the author, and I can help you with this too, there's been a great deal of action by Blue Cross in particular, and I don't know about what Delta is doing, but about post-payment audits going back, they say only a few months, but it's like 3 and 4 years, I hear. And so simply a recovery based upon an audit where they said that they didn't want to pay is not a bar to anything about the ethics or the quality. And I think if you limit yourself to really high criteria about people that have had, you know, some many general investigations, and if they're dismissed, that's different. But if it's a finding of fact, and certainly you want to include groups like Apple Tree and others like that. So I can help you with that. And the bill I had in a committee some time ago talked about Blue Cross, and they're actually in negotiations with me. And so they've been good about that. But I just wanted to point out that your language would allow for that kind of a reason not to include a dentist. And if there's a dentist who wants to work on these terms, we want him in the program, and I know you do. So I commend your work, and thanks, Dr. Helgeson.
Okay, are there other people in the audience who wish to comment?
Thank you, Chairman Huntley and committee, and particular thanks to a new acquaintance here, Representative Bunn. And I will echo Representative Liebling's comments regarding her, as well as Dr. Helgeson. You're a very quick study. I have to tell you, a very quick study, and you put in a tremendous amount of work. I understand, and first I didn't introduce myself. I'm Tony DeAngelis, and I'm Chief of Dentistry at Hennepin County Medical Center. And I think in terms of health care, and I have to be reminded from time to time that this is really about cutting costs and saving dollars. So I want you to know that I understand that. But I'd like you to put it in context. When it comes to the dental dollar, we're really not talking about dental dollars, we're talking about dental pennies. Because dental costs and dental services represent a minuscule portion of medical costs. A minuscule portion. And so I can't stress that enough. And it's even less when it comes to state program enrollees. And that's why I find the governor's proposal astonishingly disproportionate in scope. It's economically flawed, and it's fraught with unintended consequences, some of which you've heard and some of which I'll address. I think if it were ever to go through, it would make the British National Health Service look like a concierge medical practice. Okay? I think what Representative Bunn's proposal does, and it does need finessing, it's an attempt to retain basic, essential services. No bells and whistles here. Nothing fancy. Basic health services. You know, some have suggested that we should not include this or that for fear that the entire legislation will be thrown out. This issue about some things not being included because they'll be abused. I really feel like we have to separate out care from the regulatory process. There are others to deal with that. You have to keep focused on care. I think my position is that we are here, or at least I am here, to advocate for our patients, and to do anything less would be abrogating my responsibility as a healthcare provider. Also, it's easier to negotiate down than to negotiate up. And I don't want to come here as a supplicant begging for crumbs. I'm going to ask for what patients need. And then I'll fight you to take it away from me. I recognize that we have to share the burden and make decisions within the constraints of an enormously challenging
job for all of you sitting here. But in all deliberations, this should be equity. 100% cut is, it's obscene and it's cruel. If we retain even 75% of present services, we're still absorbing a 25% cut. That is significant, and we're dealing with pennies to start with. With no access to preventive or basic dental care, there'll be an increase, as I already mentioned, in not only the number of patients, but the severity of patients presenting to emergency rooms, regardless of our best attempts at establishing an urgent dental care system. At ACMC, we have a 5-day-a-week urgent care dental clinic as part of our program, and our emergency room still sees 7,400 patients a year. As regards critical access, yes, it does provide additional dollars to safety net clinics and dentists serving substantial numbers of state program and uninsured patients. But remember, it's already at a greatly discounted rate. Now, elimination would go a long way in dismantling this vital safety net. And the safety net is not just clinics and hospitals and the dental schools. A lot of private providers out there absorbing this as well. And if we dismantle it, the cost of building, rebuilding at some time in the future will be prohibitive. And the other thing, one of the unintended consequences, and this came about when, I don't know how many years ago, 5 years ago, we were going to impose a $500 cap, and I know I got into it with one of the committee chairs, but he said, but Dr. Danzler, that exempts pregnant women. I said, you know what, providers are going to flee this program in droves. Who's going to be left to treat the pregnant women and children? Okay, so that's something we must keep in mind. And the final point, less apparent, the safety net is where many of tomorrow's dentists, dental specialists, and allied health personnel receive considerable and valuable clinical training. And by reducing our ability to educate these future clinicians, we risk diminishing the quality of care for all Minnesotans, not just public care patients, but for all Minnesotans. And I don't want to believe, I don't believe that we either want or can afford such an outcome. We accept that we must shoulder our fair, and I underline fair, share of the burden. However, I adamantly reject sacrificing the oral health and well-being of our most vulnerable citizens and compromising the education of tomorrow's providers. Thank you. I will not attend any
questions. Dr. DeAngelis, could you briefly comment about the role of dental care for people that have diabetes?
With
diabetes.
Would you like one dramatic example?
Sure.
Okay. For want of a simple extraction, we saw our patient who spent 3 months in our surgical ICU. It's a patient with a comorbidity, and that comorbidity was diabetes. The bill probably approached $1 million for want of a maybe $150 procedure. And this is, we talked about, you know, don't pay us. Someone else is going to pay. And the medical dollar is always more expensive. So, yes, I mean, delaying services, healing's tougher for diabetics. I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but I try to use an example. And it's graphic, and we see it from time to time. And I just believe we'll see more of it. And that's what I meant by not just numbers, but severity of clinical presentation.
Other questions for Dr. Daniels? Representative Prisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor, I just want to comment and thank you also for your comments. And as a nursing home nurse for 40 years, we warehouse these people without dental care. The majority of the patients that I have seen in my lifetime in the nursing home do not have dental insurance and did not have access. We have sent over 8,000 patients to a dentist in Blooming Prairie who would see our MA patients. I wonder what would have happened to those 8,000 if they hadn't seen that dentist in Blooming Prairie. thank you, Representative Bunn, for bringing this bill forward. I still have yet to see a dentist in my nursing home. I have a beauty chair, but not a dentist chair. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Bunn renews her motion. That, was there somebody else there that wanted to talk? If there's anybody else, why don't you line up so I know you're there.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Wolfe, the Director of Children's Dental Services and also a member of the Safety Net Coalition. Children's Dental Services is an independent, nonprofit provider of dental care since 1919, serving the poorest of the poor children in Minnesota as well as pregnant women. Last year, Children's Dental Services saw over 16,000 children and pregnant women. And over 99% of those patients fell below 200% of the federal poverty guideline. And mainly I want to say thank you so much for tackling this challenging issue, and also Representative Bunn for recognizing the significant importance of oral health to our overall health and not allowing funding to be completely decimated from our programs. I wanted to speak to the issue of the Critical Access Provider Program and the success that we've seen since we started receiving critical access dollars at Children's Dental Services. Our number of patients increased by 50%. So it has not only increased access, but been really essential for us to maintain our services to the poorest of the poor children in Minnesota. So I really encourage all of you to continue some measure of support for the Critical Access Program. Thank you.
Is there anybody else? Okay, seeing none, then Representative Bunry, the bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you very much, Representative Bunn, for a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Representative Thiessen's bill will not be heard today. It will be heard next Tuesday. What?
Okay. Dr. Helmy, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1832.
That's a great motion. We held over for something.
And to shorten up the debate, I would move to amend it by deleting sections 4, 5, and 6.
So those are costing money. So
those are three sections that are great things to do, but we have a positive fiscal note. So basically, we're back to the original 1832 bill.
So the motion is to remove sections 4, 5, and 6. Any questions about that? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. You have a much smaller bill, Representative House. The department wants to.
Yeah.
Do you have an amendment?
Let me just give a brief introduction. This sets up a state medical review team that will basically help people get declared officially disabled sooner. Some of you may know that if you're trying to get SSI, it may take you 3 or 4 or 5 years before they reach that conclusion. The reason we wish to do this, first of all, it helps the people with their lives, and second of all, then we're eligible for more federal match. So that's the basic reason behind it, and it requires that this team help these individuals who are disabled reach the appropriate status as being officially disabled, and we have somebody here from the department too.
And do you have an amendment you want to move as well? The 83-year amendment?
Okay, yes. I do wish to move the A3 amendment.
Chair Huntley, move the A3 amendment. Do you want to describe it for us?
This changes some of the technical references in the bill, and it was from the department, and You wish to explain it?
Do we have to?
Mr. Chair, members, Senator McCann from DHS, the amendment to the bill just clarifies DHS's role and the county's role in collecting information in the disability determination process.
Okay. Any questions about the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the 8th Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? You're on a roll.
Well,
you want to talk about the bill?
It again, it will help individuals that believe they are disabled reach that official determination. And ultimately, this will save the state money.
I think we're all set. Any questions? You're not drawing any questions. Anybody in the audience want to come and testify against this, though? Just kidding. okay, it'll be held over for... Are you done? You want to
say anything else? No, I was going to ask you, is there anybody in the audience who wants to talk in favor of it here?
It's only a joke about the closing. Does anybody want to say it's a great idea? Well, their heads are nodding everywhere, Ms. Ripsahami. They love this bill. The bill is held over. And while you're there, do you want to comment on the plans for next week when we get back? And
well, some of us are really busy. We've gotten a lot of the language to the research people from the 6th floor, and hopefully that will enable them to spend Easter at home. We will be presenting the bill informally to members of Tuesday or Monday.
I'd like to phone a friend. She has a microphone. You don't get to pass her now. Could you just... would you yield for a question, Ms. Holcomb? Go ahead.
Jennifer, Holcomb, why don't you give us the schedule for next week?
She'll yield for a question. She will yield.
I think that the delete all will be available to members of the Finance Division Tuesday. I don't know when yet. It will depend on when everything's done. And then 24 hours after that will be the amendment rule. So if we get to you guys by 2 o'clock on the 15th for all amendments to House Research, Representative Huntley will probably present the bill on the 15th. He will probably actually do some other bills that day too. And then we'll have markup and public testimony on the 16th. As well as maybe a few other bills.
And is there a hearing on Tuesday?
There is a hearing on Tuesday, and I can't tell you what's on it because I don't know yet.
But there'll be a bunch of bills, and then this will be passed out. We won't talk about the lead all there, or will we be presented with the one?
Nope, that's Monday. Monday, Representative Huntley will present the bill on committee.
No, Monday we're gone.
I mean, sorry, Wednesday. That's not
Wednesday, and then Thursday's a markup then. So we'll be here. I think we come in at 8 on Thursday, is that
right? We have the room from 8 a.m. to midnight on Thursday, and I'm hoping not to use it.
Just tell them the midnight. Forget that midnight part. We have it from 8 till 10 in the morning, and then we have to be done, right? Okay. So is that clear to members? Got more questions? I'd say Ms. Holcomb to offer more comments on any other topic. Seeing none, have a nice Easter. We're adjourned.